welcome everyone. Thanks for making a little bit of time over a busy lunchtime slot. Week five of term, we know that you're all extremely busy, but we really value the opportunity when we have someone like Judith visiting the department to get to meet members of the department. And she's met a number of groups already this morning, and she'll be meeting some of our PhDs and postdocs this afternoon. You know about Judith, you've read her biography. Her biography was in your handouts. She was an undergraduate here and has had, I think, a remarkable career. And I've really enjoyed talking to her this morning, and also when I spoke to her a couple of weeks back to invite her to come and join us. I will let her tell you about her career and to give us some reflections. You know, we're back to some sort of normality after COVID. Those of you who are first years, hopefully you've had a more interesting year than the current second and third years. It's an opportunity for us to start doing what we used to do pre-January 2020. We had more informal sessions such as this. We tried to do them in person, but we felt that today over lunch, because people are rushing around, allowing you to have lunch while following the presentation was much easier than trying to get you into a lecture theater. But at the end of the term, we'll try and put on a session where you get to meet PhDs and postdocs, talk about their work, and again, just develop relationships across the department. It's not just about your college or your subject. And please make the most of the opportunities that are available to you in Cambridge. This is what we do as part of our well-being agenda. We want you to feel happy, but inspired to do great science. It's part of our Athena Swan work, and that's the work that we've been doing for a number of years now to address the underrepresentation of women in the STEM subjects. That's the whole reason about putting the biographies at the front of the handouts, all the emails we bombard you with, the posters, the videos. It's just to inspire you and make you realize that being in Cambridge is a stepping stone, really, to go on and do whatever you want for the rest of your careers. So I'm going to now slide my computer across to Judith and get her to tell you about her wonderful career and her observations. And in about half an hour, we'll see how much time we've got for some Q&A.
Right. Hello, I'm Judith. To reiterate what Nick said, I don't mind if you're eating, drinking coffee in your PJs, whatever it is, feel free to turn your camera on. It's sort of helpful, but I do understand if you don't want to. I don't know what's normal around here. Hello. Hi, Tom. Hello, person who's just turned their screen on. So I used to be an undergrad like you. I was at Fitzwilliam College. I came from a grammar school in Peterborough. This is back in the 70s. It's, you know, where 50% of the, or at least 30% of kids went to grammar school, not quite as things are today. So I was a little bit astonished to find that I was at Cambridge and absolutely delighted. The first thing, some of what I say sounds terribly negative. I had a wonderful time. I had an absolutely wonderful time, and I'm in love with Lensfield Road. That's why I've come back. I always adored this building and everything we did here, and I don't know why. I do not know why. I came to Cambridge to be a physicist. I came as an A-level student with an overinflated ego who thought I was going to go and work at CERN. And I discovered very, very quickly that that was probably not going to happen. I loved doing physics. I enjoyed it. But chemistry made more sense to me, which is good. Didn't help with the CERN ambitions, but I was happy doing chemistry. So that was good. One of the reasons I was happy was because we got to do lab work as well. In the second year, I believe part two is still the same, we did three subjects. So I did a double chemistry, double inorganic. I was an inorganic chemistry, not chemist, and I'll come back to that. And my third subject, I did history and philosophy of science. And I did that because I didn't quite fit the scientist mold. And what I found as the year developed was that after a day or two in the labs, I was really ready to sit down with my HPS tutor and argue the toss about free will and stuff like that. And after a couple of hours of doing that, I couldn't wait to get back into the labs with bits of glassware and chemicals that actually were supposed to behave. I know they don't always, but you could tell that there was a reason and a purpose behind everything. I have always found that balance, for me, works. I love science, but I don't think a life in a lab would have suited me. Part of me thinks that that's absolutely a ridiculous thing to say, because I have met scientists, and more now than before, who, so I ended up working at the BBC. And through doing that, I became acquainted with more scientists than you can shake a stick at, because on Tomorrow's World, we just ate them up. I mean, you'd meet a new one and you're interviewing somebody new every 2 weeks. You're going to visit research institutes. You're going to labs. You're getting shown around. You're meeting the department. And it was wonderful. And I suppose what I realized, which might be useful to you, may not be a surprise, is that there are many, many different kinds of research scientists. And it was one of the team leaders, one of the profs, I was going to name him, and I've forgotten his surname now. Anyway, never mind. But a guy, he was one of the first guys to research into the genetics of cystic fibrosis and trying to do genes. It hasn't worked yet, but he was one of the drivers. Excuse me, Bob Williamson, who's now in Australia. And he said, there are people, you know, in my team, I have so-and-so who is the pure academic. I have so-and-so who will think round corners, and I have so-and-so who gets things done. And he said, I'm not going to make a judgment as to which is the best academic, but all those skills are essential if you want to, if you want research to move forward. And had I become a scientist, I think I would have been one of the ones who got things done, but I wouldn't have been one of the ones that was working till 3 a.m. analyzing the nitty-gritty. So do with that what you will. There are many different kinds of scientists. So having become an inorganic chemist, that was great. I then got to my third year. Everything went pretty well. One of the reasons it went well was that it's a bit ahead of its time for the 70s, but I had a director of studies who understood about communication. And I'm not going to name him in this one. Nick knows who I'm talking about, but he wasn't the most subtle of people. So I remember having bust up with a boyfriend and standing, having been sobbing in the loos, standing sort of red eyed, and him shouting across the corridor, "How are you doing, Judith? Look a bit peaky." I thought, so I'm not saying that this was the perfect communicator, but he was always willing to sit and chat. And he made me realize that even if I didn't get a first and I didn't end up in a lab, life wasn't going to end for me. And that, for that, I'm grateful to him, because I didn't get a first. Here's the thing. No, one time in my whole career has anybody asked what grade of a degree I got. And the reason they asked, this is at the BBC for the science department, but I was asked after the interview and after I got the job, and they said, basically we've placed bets on what your degree was, because I had not put it on my CV and I got a 2-2, okay? And I didn't put it on because I was still slightly smarting from the fact that I hadn't got a 2-1. And I felt that everybody would judge me because I hadn't got a 2-1. They were taking bets because they said somebody in the interview had said, the only people who don't write their degree grade on get thirds. So basically I'd made them think I'd done worse than I had by just not writing it down. But that is the only time anybody even thought about degree levels. Honestly, nobody worries. It's just as once you graduate, nobody's going to ask about your GCSE results. Once you've had your first job, nobody is going to ask about your degree grade. So make sure you work as hard as you can, do everything you can and get your degree. But just don't sweat it too much if things don't go quite how you want them to. And if they do and you get your first and you carry on researching in Cambridge, good for you. Brilliant. Absolutely fabulous, and be proud of it. But the rest of us can be proud of it too. So while you're here, you're learning very specific things about chemistry. Again, I keep thinking Nick might reach over and smack me, but you will never probably need these bits of knowledge again. What you will take away from your 3 years here is an approach to problem solving. is general knowledge and a confidence not to be scared by technical subjects. And that is a transferable skill. So as it happens, I went into science broadcasting, not a career I recommend for anyone now because the world has slightly changed and broadcasting is not quite the dream job it used to be. But even there, where I read more research papers than I had ever read in all my time as an undergrad, what I got from being an undergrad here and the confidence of having graduated from Cambridge was I knew that for broadcasting purposes, I could read the abstract and the conclusion and I didn't need to worry about the middle. The people who graduated with English degrees and came on to science broadcasting felt the need to go through all the nitty gritty and they just wasted their effort because for TV, you didn't need that much detail. So I'm not saying the middle isn't important. Of course it is for scientists and for the people in the field, but it's the being able to tackle technical subjects and make a judgment about what is necessary for your work, which you will take away. And you won't be scared by it. And believe you me, people who don't study science are scared of science. They don't, they're apprehensive. They back off. They go, you know, it's kind of, I am not worthy. And you guys will never be like that. And that's a real asset. I had friends who went on to be accountants. I had friends, chemists, chemical friends. I had a guy, scholar, friend at Fitzwilliam, got first all the way through. I mean, he was a scholar when he arrived. He got first right through to the very, very end. He ended up being head of marketing at Timberland and very, very happily so. Very good at his job, very well regarded. I have never asked him, I'll tell you his name. He might be able to come back and talk to people. I don't know what he got out of studying chemistry, but it certainly didn't hold him back. He went on, did an MBA afterwards at the Wharton. There used to be a scheme, the Turon Awards, and it was an exchange scheme with Cambridge, and he got one of those. Sometimes I worry that we all talk as if you're supposed to know already what you're going to do with your life. At your age, I did not know that I was going to end up being a film director. There was nothing whatsoever in my CV that would have told anyone that I was going to be a film director. I didn't even take many snaps. I mean, we didn't have phones, so we weren't videoing anything. I mean, that was, you had to get a Super 8 camera and nobody had one of those. So sure, when I decided I wasn't going to be a scientist and I thought I'd write about it. So I then channeled myself into becoming a journalist. I crammed to become a news journalist. And it didn't take because I was cramming. I was trying to learn things that I wasn't interested in. And going back to, you know, the reason I'm a scientist, essentially, is I can't remember things. I couldn't remember the names and the dates and the order of the kings and queens. Whereas I didn't have to remember much in chemistry and in science. I could work it out. As long as you understand the principles, you can work it out. Trying to work in news, suddenly I had to remember that the Potomac River was in Washington. I have a horrible feeling I put it in Africa at some point. Didn't get that job. Once I realized, and it was advice from a tutor here, who said, if you're going out of research, use your science as a lever. It's an asset that you have, maybe in your back pocket, maybe you hold it up in front of you as a placard, but it's an asset that you hold that people out there don't hold. So if you go into management consultancy, say, you'll have an edge when it comes to doing projects with the drug companies, when it comes to doing projects with energy companies, and projects with industrial catalysis, depending on your various background. Your success won't depend on that, but odds are you'll find it easier and you'll be more successful. And you might find it slightly easier to get jobs because you've got this scientific background. The guy who gave me the advice said, if you really want to go into journalism and television, just remember thousands of other people will be doing the same, but they won't be trying to be a science journalist. Hadn't crossed my mind. I don't think I'd ever read a piece. I'd seen Horizon, but I don't think I'd read a piece of science journalism. So that hadn't crossed my mind. It was phenomenally good advice. And that's how I ended up with a 30-year career in science broadcasting, which was just the most fun you could ever imagine, seriously. And I'm not going to go into that, because as I said to Nick, it just isn't the same career anymore, but it's great fun. But if you are a communicator, there's an outfit called the Association of British Science Writers. They are good, they are thorough. And this year they're celebrating some mega anniversary, like 75 years. Just look into them. These are the guys who write the books. These are the guys who write the popular science books, not, you know, the academic tomes, not your textbooks, but they're the people who write the books that popularize science. Maybe that's your thing. Even if you are a technical writer, have a look at them and see what they're doing, because there's some really interesting people there. Roger Highfield, he wrote a book called The Edge of the Universe, and I read that when I was 18, and it really inspired me in my studies about, I did an astronomy option in my physics A level. Absolutely fascinating. And he's still there, senior in the ABSW, still writing books. Very, very happy man. He's had a wonderful career. He was science journalist for the Daily Telegraph. Forever, I think. I think he's now actually director of the Science Museum. But there are careers in the museum world. There are careers even in the art world. We were talking this morning. A Cambridge chemist is the chief art restorer in the whole of the UK. His job is to analyze paint samples, work out what those paint flecks were made from, and then recreate the paint that was used in the 13th century and the 14th century. He's a Cambridge chemist. Somebody who made the puppets for Spitting Image. That's a satirical comedy series from quite a long while ago, but it was look up Spitting Image, Margaret Thatcher, you'll get the idea. He made the puppets because they wanted someone who understood polymers and plastics and who could handle them and who could make these plastic models to the right consistency, I suppose, come up with the right recipe. But you've got many, many options. And all I can say is life won't always work out how you expect it to. It is, to quite a large extent, your choices, well, 100% your choices, which way things will go. But I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but it's for you to make things happen. It's your life. It's your responsibility to make things happen. Sometimes making things happen means going to your boss, going to your tutor and saying, I'm not quite sure what to do next and I need your advice. I don't want to overwhelm the professors here, but people love having their advice asked. And if you're not sure, it's always better to talk too much than not at all. Otherwise you make decisions based on the wrong information. So even if they're good decisions, I was saying that like it was a negative thing. Go and say, I've got two fabulous opportunities and I just can't decide what to do. I can stay here, be near my family and do X, or I can have this amazing opportunity and go and do Y. Or I feel obliged to take the amazing opportunity, but actually I just don't think I'm up to it right now. What should I do? How can I prepare myself better? People will help you if you talk to them. But ultimately, you have to take the advice and act on it. You don't self-censor. Don't, if you can possibly avoid it, say, I'm not good enough for this. I'm sure you've all read the statistics, and I always think that boys get a bit of a you guys get short shrift here, and it's not always fair, but boys apply for jobs when they can do 20% of it and they figure they'll learn 80%, and girls apply for jobs when they can do 80% of it and they're nervous about applying if they can't do 100%. I have seen that so often. So girls don't self, women, sorry, don't self-censor. It is for you to put yourself forward. Don't sit around waiting to be asked. And the same goes for boys, actually, although you have less of that problem in my experience, in the career that I grew up through. People, the blokes were much better about saying, but I want to be doing this. Why aren't I doing Y or X? It is for us to put ourselves forward and put ourselves out there and accept criticism. If you're told you can't do it, then accept it. Try and understand why. But you all have fabulous careers. They will take you in different directions. There are a million things that scientists out there can do. How many of you, okay, I'm testing the hand up facility. How many of you are organic chemists?
Or consider yourself
organic. Or consider yourself to be organic chemists. Who are favoring organic chemistry? Okay, very good. Oh, that's three, that's good. Are you looking toward human organic chemistry, if you see what I mean, or industrial organic chemistry? Yeah, okay, all right. Fair enough. Oh, do we have any inorganic chemists here? Oh, okay.
Possibly,
fair enough. What about theoretical chemists? Are any of you deeply into orbitals? Okay, fair enough. Okay, you're still doing everything. Absolutely. And that is the power of the Cambridge Natural Sciences Tripos. That you get to work out, you get to try different sciences. I think the Natural Sciences Tripos is the best in the world because, okay, I came in thinking I was a physicist. The reason I 100% couldn't be a physicist is that I had learned, I mean, you're so modern, this might not mean much, but I had done traditional maths at school. So I had done differentiation and integration to an extreme level. I had never seen a matrix in my life until I sat in a part 1A lecture and they drew a matrix and started talking about vectors. And I just thought, it's like, I don't know how to do 2 + 2 = 4 here. I do not know what these people are talking about. I scraped through, but there's no way, there's just no way you can do theoretical physics if you can't do matrices and vectors, and I've never touched them before. So that was one career adjustment. I do sound slightly trivial, Nick. I do worry about this. I did make choices for profound reasons sometimes.
But you must have met people along the way that influenced you one way or the other.
Oh, absolutely. Well, okay, it's no coincidence that Brian Johnson was an inorganic chemist. So, influential chemistry question. How many atoms of something get, what's the minimum number of atoms, for instance, of iron, which will display the qualities of iron, the bulk metal, magnetism, been shiny, probably under a microscope. I believe it's 230 or 270, and then you get a dipole. But I reserve the right to be corrected there. Most interesting concept, if I can't remember the fact, most interesting concept I came across in the whole of my time here. Just the idea that there was a transition between the atomic and the quantum stuff into the macro stuff. Where does that transition lie? I still find that absolutely fascinating. But ultimately, I did a year of organic chemistry. And working in the lab, you do loads of crystals. I love making crystals. I made spiky crystals, hexagonal crystals, cubic crystals. But in organic chemistry, they were all white. And by the end of the year, I just thought, I can't deal with this. Sorry, this is why I say I sound so trivial. But I went to my professor and said, I have to do a project over the summer, an organic chemistry project. Please, can I make a crystal which is not white? So he had a hunt around. He said, well, you could do a polyporphyrin. So I was motivated by making a maroon purple crystal that would glow in ultraviolet light. Pretty cool, huh? The work that that took me through, because nobody had made a polyporphyrin as their summer project, meant I did have to go and read research papers, because nobody had a set, there wasn't a set routine, this is what the student does, a set method. I had to go and research it for myself, had to do my own chemistry, and I actually got written up in dispatches in the organic lectures in the third year, when the lecturer said scathingly, kind of, you lot ought to be able to make this or synthesize this. An inorganic chemist managed it last year. There was a real snobbery around among the organic chemists.
I'm sure it's still in this.
Does it?
I'm sure.
That's terrible. Anyway, but I just mean I made so, and then I went on, I studied inorganic chemistry, and frankly, I think catalysis is absolutely fascinating. I think it's phenomenally useful. But it was generally driven by the fact I didn't want to make white crystals. So you make decisions. No, make the decisions that you want to make and see where they take you.
So, Judith, now the benefit of hindsight, you described very beautifully, you know, your background, you know, as a student. And would you have done anything differently with the benefit of hindsight?
Ooh, okay. In the end, I didn't do a PhD. I didn't have the option when I left Cambridge. When I went and taught for a year. I wanted a gap year, but I had no money, so I went and got a job abroad. At the end of that year, it's funny, we don't think of it as networking, but these days that's probably what we'd say. Some of my supervisors, my former supervisors, were working at the University of Toronto, so I went to see them. I got introduced to their professor. He was a good inorganic chemist, and I did get offered a PhD position, a postgrad position. I decided not to take it. I think it was a very grown-up decision. I knew I had a job at the BBC and I was scared of letting it go. I now know that if I'd carried on, I'd done the PhD, I could have gone back to the BBC and got a job. I now know that. But it's very hard to say that to the recent graduate who only knows graduate training schemes and doesn't know anything else. General advice for jobs. Sorry. So one regret, I think I would have done a PhD because I think I would have thought it set me apart slightly. But didn't actually matter that I hadn't got one. There were other people who did my job who had PhDs, and there were other people who didn't. So it didn't, people who had English degrees, frankly, we were a very mixed bag. Does that answer it?
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Yes.
What is a graduate training scheme?
Some companies have training. They want graduates, but they need to coach graduates in the thinking in their industry. You'll have to, I don't know how modern this is. But, yeah. So let's say you decided that you wanted to work for the Foreign Office. Okay. That's a nice, sounds non-scientific, but they'd snap you up. The Foreign Office has a fast track graduate training scheme. And what they do, and I think this is pretty typical of a graduate training scheme, is they put you for 6 months in a department here, 6 months over there, 6 months over here, so that you get to see lots of parts of the business. And then at the end of 2 years, one of those departments will come and say, we want you to work with us, or you go back to your favorite one and say, please, can I come and work with you? God, it was such a good 6 months. It's certainly, it worked that way. I mean, if the BBC still have, this isn't, it's not like being an intern. It is a proper training program. They've already decided they want you. At the BBC, you would do the people who I know. I didn't get on it at first. I came in a very modest route. I was a sound engineer and I worked my way up through the ranks, but it worked. I got in. And then once you're in, you get to see the people advertise jobs within the industry before they advertise them outside. So if you yearn to work in a hospital in Tokyo, go get a job in a hospital in Tokyo, at least for the summer, and see how their system works, sort of get to know the area. And then you get exposed to opportunities. But Foreign Office, you would get, even Foreign, it sounds weird, but I talked to a young graduate, excuse me, who had been put into the Home Office for 6 months. She was working on the Olympics. Then she was taken and put into an embassy somewhere for 6 months. And then she was put into a Department for Work and Pensions for 6 months to give the trainees an understanding of government. And then she would go off and do her posting. I keep saying Foreign Office. I think it's actually the Civil Service Fast Track Scheme. I think that's it. Because for people like you, they'd probably want you to go into business, industry and research. But you don't have to. You may be a brilliant export negotiator because you can talk to people in industry. Management consultancy is another good one. I have a phobia about accountancy, but certainly more chemists went on to be accountants than in my year. It horrified me, but they've had very nice lives and been very happy doing it. So don't knock it. But management consultants seem to have quite an interesting time. But again, they'll do 6 months working with the police, 6 months consulting with Glaxo, 6 months consulting somewhere else. And then at the end of that time, they've got a sense, they've learned how to be a consultant. And then you get a job, you know, you work with just one of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And actually on that topic, when would you start looking for things like that? I mean, we're first year, but we keep getting emails about, or at least I'm a first year. There's always emails saying, oh, apply for this graduate scheme or have a look at this. And I don't want to think about it now, but I'm sort of panicking as to when.
This is an important point because we see this very much, and the world has changed in the last 5 or so years. If you're a first year, I think the advice I think we'd share, and I see that the head of department's also on here. And our advice is, if you're a first year, the next couple of years enjoy life.
Yeah.
There is this unnecessary pressure that you have to do internships at every opportunity, or your life will be destroyed professionally. That simply is not the case. By the second year, you start to develop the skills that someone may want to take you on over a summer internship. But talk to your DOS, talk to your tutor. The career service in the university is outstanding. It's considered one of the best in the country, if not the world. There are lots of resources. But as Judith said, talk to people. But don't worry too much about the internships, because it's a new thing that people turn up in October of their first year and start panicking about something. And when I have my students say, what do I do this summer? Learn a language, play an instrument, climb a mountain, you know, take up yoga. Don't worry about it too much, is my advice.
Study sharks in Costa Rica.
Yeah, go and do something really exciting. Go to a hospital in Tokyo.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there are cost implications, but talk to your college. Yes. Your college provides enormous amount of information.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at the time, and most of you are going to have to rush off to supervisions or practical classes. So thank you very, very much for joining. We're looking between the two screens. So I'm sorry, again, the technology is a little bit disrupted today. But look, enjoy the rest of the term. There are a few weeks left. Easter vacation. Things are getting back to normal. Please enjoy your time in Cambridge. That's the advice that we're going to give you. Anyone who teaches you, even if we apply some pressure because we want you to be ambitious about your work, ultimately, we want you to enjoy being in Cambridge. Stay happy. Stay healthy. Eat a lot. Sleep a lot, make a lot of friends, enjoy chemistry, because that's what we're here to do. And we'll try and put on more of these programs, more of these informal events, just to get you to hear from people who are not within the Cambridge bubble. So thanks for joining. Enjoy the rest of the day, and we'll see you later in the term. Take care. Bye, everyone.
Thank you very much.